Hi, good morning. This is Bill Clark, and I'm the host of Scrambled Eggs and Ham. And this morning, I'm here with my host, Don Maxwell Wade, and our special guest is Beth. Hey, Beth, how you doing today?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing good. I'm struggling, but I'm fighting. I'm a fighter. And Don, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great.
Good, good, good. Wonderful.
Yep.
Wonderful.
I wanted to give a quick description of our podcast, if I may.
Yes.
Okay. The Scrambled Eggs and Ham podcast is a weekly interview show focused upon the reinvention of lives of each interviewee as a result of or inspired by the life-changing illnesses that have now become a part of their daily existence. In each case, the interviewee has used his or her illness, from strokes or neurological disorders, for example, as the impetus for personal growth, Beth?
Yes?
A little bit of a description about what your challenges are?
Okay, can I describe what my challenges are?
Yes.
Okay, basically my challenges deals with my moving ability. Although I've had two strokes, my ability to move or challenge myself to move as fast as I used to before the stroke has been a real challenge for me. I used to walk 5 miles a day as a daily regimen to try to keep myself in shape and just healthy. And I find it difficult to even get 1 mile out, you know, that I'm unconsciously focused on. So my left side was affected, and it still tends to be very weak. My leg seems to be weak, although I've been in physical therapy for like 3 years trying to get this to strengthen up. It still hasn't. I still have difficulty with that side really being more the weaker side. And that's my main challenge, other than, you know, you have residuals that affect you, you know. So I have breathing issues because I couldn't talk correctly after my second stroke, and that affected my breathing and everything that I've been dealing with, as far as even talking was an issue before. Right. But as you see, I can run my mouth now, so I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm talking now, but it was a difficult struggle, one that I didn't think I was going to get through. But That's the tidbit as far as physically. I think emotionally, I think it's affected me more because I realize now that I can't really have a straight, sensitive conversation or really trying to express my emotions without me falling out and crying instantly. And I get mad at myself because I don't want to cry at that point, but it seems like it's something that I can't control anymore. And that's something that I'm trying to work on, you know, because it gets a little embarrassing when you're trying to make a point and, you know, you just start tearing up and people are like, what's wrong? Why is she crying? And I have to tell people, well, this is from my stroke. This is not really like I'm emotional like that. So that's another residual effect that I have.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Beth. You know, I also have a friend who has a stroke, is a brain injury, and he has the same the same thing where he couldn't stop crying. Actually, he was a police officer when he had the stroke.
Oh, wow.
And there's something, I forgot the name of it, but there's something that he takes now, a medication that he takes to help him overcome that. And myself, I can relate to what you're saying, because I had something like that in the beginning of my event, my stroke, where I could just be like watching TV, you know, I mean, and this tears would just start rolling down my face. And I was able to overcome that. I think it was maybe the chanting that helped me overcome that, or just, you know, it's something I don't have that issue anymore for the last 2 years. But tell me about your work. You're working now, right?
Yeah, I was working as a...
I'm sorry. Hello?
I'm still here.
Beth? I think we lost her.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, hold on. Let me try to get her back.
Again?
Oh.
What did you ask me about work?
Yeah, my question. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I used to work as a substitute teacher before the stroke. Mm-hmm. And I decided not to. And after being out of work for 2 years, I decided that I need to be out in the public engaging with people. I don't need to sit in this house and just lament on my woes, you know, and definitely through chanting, I was able to, you know, gain the courage to go out on an interview. And, you know, sometimes they ask you about your health or how are you able to do this job and whatever. And my problem was fearing that I would start breaking down and crying when I start talking about my stroke. But fortunately, that didn't happen. And being able to engage in the public and deal with different people has, it's really invigorated my life to where I definitely have something to look forward to doing. And it's something that I can do. So I really like that now because I'm able to make money again. So I don't really find it. They accommodate for me at my job, which I tell them I have standing issues. And so they allow me to sit, which is perfect because, you know, it makes the job much easier. So right now I'm really enjoying it. It's just a little job. It's just a part-time job, but it means a lot. For I feel for my recovery to make myself realize that you can do something. You're not just stuck as a stroke victim, because in the beginning of my stroke, all I could tell people is I feel like I'm walking in quicksand. I feel like I can't move. And there's days that I feel like that now, but I'm able to push myself, convince myself that I can do. But in the beginning, there would be days that I would wake up and I would chant, and then I would turn the TV on and I would sit in the same spot the whole entire day. Other than going to the bathroom or making something to eat, I would stay in the same spot the whole day. And I'm like, wait a minute, you got to do more. Your life is more than just waking up and sitting in the same spot all day. And I did that for months before I really started to realize. And, you know, I'm really, it is through my daimuku, my chanting, that I'm able to do what I do, you know, because I do know that that is my foundation. That is the first thing that I do in the morning. And it really, it really gets me up and it gets my day going. But, you know, at first, I was very negative in the beginning of my stroke because I had just came off of a big campaign that I was very successful in, and I was like so gung-ho, and I had just planned my whole year out of 2019, how much money I was going to make, where I was going to go, what I was going to do, and just to simply wake up and all of those dreams are shattered, you know.
So Santoshima hit you, huh?
I had no idea, you know, like to wake up and I find myself stumbling into my bathroom and I'm like, what is wrong with you, girl? You know, and I had a wonderful dog.
I remember that. It was a Doberman, Jack, right?
Not Doberman, a chocolate lab. He was the reason why I started to think something was wrong with me, because I went almost a week of having my first stroke and not realizing it. Mm-hmm. But it was through my having to get up and walk him that I realized that I'm not going down my steps right. And when I started walking, I was walking like a drunk person. And I'm like, why are you walking like this? And nothing was dawning on me. And it wasn't until I started noticing that my dog, Jack, instead of sleeping at the end of the bed, he was sleeping at the side of the bed. So when I would get up, I would almost be stepping on him. And I would be fussing at him, Jack, you got to move out the way. Not realizing that he is sensing something is wrong with me. And he's trying, I guess, to protect me from falling, or, you know, dogs have that kind of sixth sense about themselves. And it was him that made me say, okay, I'm going to drop you. I had to take the dog somewhere. And I said, I'm going to drive myself to the emergency room. And because I've worked in a hospital for 19 years in an emergency room, so I knew something was going on that I couldn't figure out what it was. And even in the emergency room, I looked normal to the doctors. They were getting ready to let me go home until I asked the doctor, well, if you're going to release me, could you tell me why am I so exhausted? I feel like I can't do anything and everything is such a challenge. And that's the thing that made the light go on in the doctor's head. He said, what do you mean that you're exhausted? I said, I'm tired. I can't do anything. And he was like, okay, well, we're going to admit you because we need to do further studies. And then when they did the CAT scan, they found the CAT scan and the MRI, they found that I had a deep a blood vessel break.
Oh,
and
no.
Said, that's what caused the stroke. And here I am. I felt bad the whole week, but I'm not paying attention, you know. And then, like I said, as soon as I got over the physical therapy that you need to go through for the first stroke, as soon as I graduate, about 2 days later, I get up out my bed and I'm walking like I'm drunk again. And I'm like, no, this did not happen again to me. And I was supposed to be having a meeting at my house. And when a couple of members came and they saw how I was walking, they told my son, no, we need to go ahead and forget about the meeting. She needs to get to the hospital. And as soon as I got to the emergency room and I told them, you know, I think I had another stroke, they took me straight to the back. And it was detected that I had another stroke, kind of like in the same area. But this time the stroke affected my left side and it affected my speech.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, that was really hard, you know, coming back from, because I'm like, to have two back-to-back and not to really understand the whole thing about strokes. And in the midst of my having strokes, my sisters are dying on me. So it was very hard. It was very hard to get through that. But through prayer, through prayer.
Well, Beth, you know, thank you for sharing that with us. That's, you know, you've been through a lot. I can identify with that, especially the part where, you know, you're walking like you're drunk. It's like you're drunk, but you're not drunk. I had the same thing happen to me when I had my stroke, where I was in the hospital and they couldn't find what was wrong, and they released me and I was walking out of the hospital, staggering all over everybody, like I was drunk, and I hadn't drunk anything for like you know, months and stuff like that. But Beth, Don, do you have a question for Beth?
More of a statement than a question. With your dog, that was very interesting, because I understand that based on the sensitivity of their sense of smell, that they can smell illness in their and it was very fortunate that your dog basically did that for you.
And the sad part about it is, because I had the two strokes, I could no longer take care of him. So I had to end up giving him up. And that was devastating to me, because I had him from a puppy. But he was like 13 and a half years old. So at least I had the pleasure of knowing that I lived with him throughout the entire existence of his life. But I put him in a shelter, and he was able to be adopted. So I was ecstatic about that. But
That's great. So, Beth, where did you grow up at?
Where did I grow up? I grew up in North New Jersey.
Okay. Can you tell us a fun fact about you coming up in Newark, or a fun fact about you?
I think what is something that I remember so much about Newark was, as a kid, you know, you were able to walk from one side of Newark to the other side of Newark, because my boyfriend at the time lived on the west side and I lived in the north side. So we would walk the whole town. It didn't matter what time, day or night. And it was just kids walking. But, you know, that's one of the things that I loved about Newark, and that Newark is surrounded by so many parks. There's so many beautiful parks that, you know, you can just go in and really enjoy, you know. That's one of the fondest things I remember, because the parks remind me of the camps that I used to go through in Newark, the day camp or the YMC camps. They were all part of a great experience that these kids nowadays don't get to enjoy.
Right. No, it's changed so much, you know. You chant. What do you chant, Beth?
What do I chant? I chant Nam Yoho Renge Kyo.
Wow. Can you tell me, can you tell us about what's it done and how it's helped you to put things in perspective?
Okay. I'm going to go backwards, because this is more recent, but I end up getting, last year, I end up getting pneumonia. They all thought it was COVID, but it wasn't. It was just straight up. But what made me realize how great this practice is that I was in the emergency. Well, they put me in the hospital and they segregate you because they feel everybody has COVID. And I'm in this tiny box of a room. And, you know, 2 days go by. And whenever I'm going to the hospital, I always snatch my Omamari Gahanzin, which is the little one, and make sure I have my suture book and beads. But I wasn't paying attention to my practice. I was just, you know, they had me concerned because I didn't have enough oxygen going on in my body. And I still wasn't focusing about Channing, but like on the third day, I just heard them saying how many sick people they were bringing in. And I'm like, you got to get out of here. And then it dawned on me. I was like, why haven't you been chanting? What is wrong with you, girl? You know that's the first thing that you needed to do. So they had oxygen in my nose and everything, but I'm like, no, you're going to do your prayers and you're going to chant. And I started to do that, and I realized that I was chanting so much that it was going on 2 hours before I knew it, that I was chanting. And the funny thing to this story is the next day, the doctors do their rounds in the morning. Uh-huh. So I was trying to get up and do my morning prayers before they get there, which means I had to brush my teeth and wash my face, and I had to take the oxygen out of my nose. Mm-hmm. So I did all that. I get back in the bed, and I start chanting, and the doctor walks in. And he goes, well, Miss Daly, you're looking a lot better. And I was like, I feel a lot better. And he says, no, I say that because I hear you praying and I don't see the oxygen in your nose. And I'm like, I was trying to find it, but I don't know where I put it at. He says, he goes and he tells me, it's on the top of your head. I was like, oh my God, I've been looking all over for this oxygen and it's sitting on top of my head. And he says, well, since you got the oxygen on the top of your head, it seems like you're breathing okay. He says, you want to go home? I was like, yes, I'm gonna go home. Yes. So that was just reaffirming to me, you know, that, you know, this practice comes first and foremost. And that's why I have always had a regimen that I don't leave the house until I chant. I just feel that my life needs to be in rhythm with the universe. And I've always been chanting that no one I know gets COVID or is not affected bad by it since COVID's been happening. And that's including myself. And this Christmas, I woke up to having COVID.
Oh, man.
I was like, look, I was really done, you know. And I was like, how, you know, once again, I want to accuse my prayers. How am I getting this? And I've been chanting so much not to get it. Where I'm not realizing that the benefit of all of this is, yeah, you did get COVID, but the COVID only lasted one day. Mm-hmm. I was totally sick for Christmas. And the next day, you wouldn't have known that I even had COVID. Wow. My son and his girlfriend got COVID, and I was telling them, stay away from me. They're like, no, you're the one that brought it into the house. But, you know, I realized just how blessed I am, because the COVID only lasted one day.
Yeah.
You know, one day, and I could do that for one day. Mm-hmm. You know, I really haven't had any residuals from that I know of. But, you know, my pulmonary doctor, he's like, well, I need to check your breathing. So they're giving me breathing tests. But it's always whenever I'm real sick, even in the hospital with the strokes, you know, I was shakabuka when I was introducing everybody to the practice, the nurses and all of them, because they would all want to hang out in my room with me. You know, you don't see nurses or not the custodians, but the orderlies hang out in your room, you know. But somehow my life condition just allowed them to do that. And they were so extra nice to me. So this practice really helps me, because I can be not going to say it, but I can be a bee sometimes, but that's what I chant not to be, to really end up developing a better character about myself where I'm nicer. And, you know, the universe shows me all the time on how people approach me, you know, and, you know, just their conversation with me always seemed light and nice, you know. So it really makes me feel good that people are feeling good talking to me. That means that there's something about my character that they see that they delight in talking to me. So this practice really puts that out there, you know.
Yes, and I think Don has a question.
I do have a question. When you had the stroke, did you find that sort of your life became disordered and chanting helps put it back in an orderly fashion, meaning making it easier to do things, I think. Go ahead.
Yes, because when I came home from coming out of the hospital, you have all those nurses and everybody there at your beck and call. And when I came home, it was just me, you know. Right. And, you know, it came over me. How are you going to do this? But I can say, although I was alone a lot of the time, and that also kind of like played on your head, the one thing that I can say about this practice is the members in my district, even members that weren't in my district, they all tried their best to help me, being coming over to my house, trying to clean my house or bring me food or cook for me. They were always calling me. The members took better care of me than anybody, because my family didn't show up. It was the members. And it was because I'm seeing these members reach out to me that I would go back to the Gahams and really chant appreciation for having the practice and these people in my life, because they were the only ones that I was talking to. But they're constantly calling me and encouraging me, gave me the strength to say, you're going to get through this. You just need to take it one day at a time and start planning what you can do each day. And if you can't do it, that's okay too. You know, that was one of the things that I had to really adjust my schedule and my being with, that you can't do everything that you used to do or that you want to do, but there's another way around it. And I found that through my practice, you know, I don't know, things just seem to come a little bit easier, because there was a lot of confusion in the beginning, because there was just a basic confusion of, why is this happening to me? I thought I was doing everything right, you know. I wasn't stressed out, but I do have high blood pressure and diabetes. And at the time, I did come, when I had my first stroke, I did come out in the kitchen and check my blood pressure, which was high. It was 170 something.
Wow, that's high.
Yeah, and my sugar was also 183, and I was like, "What are you doing?" You know. So those were the mechanisms that made me say, "You need to go to the hospital," because my sugar would never go down after a couple of days, and I'm like, something is not right. So, yeah, but I do understand what you're saying, because there is, you know, you're used to your life running one way. And I feel after the strokes, and I still feel it to the day, I feel that, like, the strokes put, like, a stop sign in front of me that says, slow down. And that's what I tell myself every day. That's how I feel, like, although my mind wants me to move so much faster, my body is like saying, not going to do it. Not, if I do it, you're going to end up hurting yourself. So that's what I've come to grips with. And that helped some of the confusion because it made me think a little slower instead of that fast pace that your mind is always thinking at. It made me evaluate things a little bit better so that when I go to do something, I'm really trying to exert the least amount of energy, because if you work too hard, you're not going to be able to get through the day. You're going to get tired and you're going to want to go to sleep. So I really try to finagle it, like if I had to go to work today in order to organize myself to be able to work, I have to tell myself you're going to sleep a certain set of hours so that when you get to work, you're not tired and dragging, because you got to be able to function. Mm-hmm. And that seems to work for me. But I do understand what you were saying about the confusion. Trust me and my family was at it. I'm like, do you guys know I almost died? Would you leave me alone and just let me heal? You know, so I do understand that whole being confused. But really, through chanting, it really helped clear my mind. Wow. Really helped to get me back in order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so I was talking to someone, one of the directors of the YMCA, and that's one of my ways of I rehabilitated myself. Was I was able to work for the YMCA, and I had everything there. You know, I had trainers, I had aerobics and water, I had Tai Chi and water, I had basketball, I had everything. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, we were talking heart to heart one day, meaning one of the directors, and he asked me about my children, and he said something like, you know, and I was struggling with, like, you know, you have to go through all these colleges and visit all the colleges and see which one they like, and they hate it, and they hate the one that you pick for them. But your money, you know, your money is like over here, but they want, they want Chicago. They want, you know, like my daughter wanted University of Arizona, which is another story. We, you know, we both have a friend there who was like very helpful. But, you know, he was talking about how kids can like can kill us. You know, worrying about kids can kill us, you know, and that's, I thought about that. I thought about
it. I didn't mean to cut you off, but, you know, when you're going through the healing process of a stroke, they let you talk to a psychiatrist, because most people suffer from major depression after coming off of a stroke. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm trying to tell a psychiatrist, look, I was planning out my whole year for 2019 and 2020. And I said, out the blue, this happened. I said, but I've been living by myself because I hadn't let my son come back home yet. Mm-hmm. But she was telling me, with your son, after hearing about our history, she says, with you, you have been in a state of fight for years. Mm-hmm. And she says, you don't understand that subconsciously your body is trying to protect you every day. There's not a let up. And she says, that could have been what caused the stroke, because I was contemplating on letting him come back home, but I really didn't think that I was spending any time on it. But apparently, subconsciously, it was really weighing on me. And she said, it's things like that, that she says it's stress that you're not even aware of that you're going through. And she says, yeah, kids are a big part of that, you know. So I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah, I can dig it. And I got one more to put through college. And let me tell you something. It's been a ride, a wild ride. But, Don, do you have something else to add?
Yeah. Yes, I won't. Did you say that your speech was affected?
Did I say that I what?
Your speech.
Your speech.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. That there was different signs that the universe was showing me that something's wrong with you, kiddo, because when I sat down to do my morning prayers, mm-hmm. you know, I just run through them real fast, and I'm running through these prayers, and I'm like, what are you saying? Those are not the words. I was like, wait a minute. You couldn't tell me. That's what made me get up and go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I said, if you can't chant, you know something's wrong. Because I was saying all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, that's not how the words are supposed to be pronounced.
But Beth, how long have you been practicing?
I've been practicing for 34 years. 34 years. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this practice in my life, because it has been my backbone. You know, it has been my backbone, and I would never give up, because I've never had anything, not a human being, anybody living alive, that's touched my life the way chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo has done for me. I have been, like, long ago, I was diagnosed, I was supposed to be dead 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I know it's 26, 27, my son just turned 27. Mm-hmm. 27 years ago, they told me I had 2 years to live. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh no, I got in front of my altar and I chanted. I was like, I did not have my son so that someone else can raise him. I want to raise him. And my son's 27 now, you know. And the doctors just look at me, you know. There's only one doctor I had that knew about Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. He says, it's that stuff you're chanting that are keeping you alive. I said, yes, it is. It's that stuff that I'm chanting, and you need to chant it too, you know. So, yes, practice has, oh, man, unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable.
Don, you have a question.
Yeah, there is a very specific reason why I asked about your speech, because it's very clear now. I would commend you on getting through that, because I also experienced, and I have experienced, speech issues for years, and I've done speech therapy, and hasn't been easy, but you speak very, very well, very clearly.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I went to JFK Hospital, which definitely has a big stroke department, and those technicians in there really work hard. They were able to tell me what it was, and how I was forming my tongue, or my tongue being too lazy, and they would give me exercises to, you know, definitely help that. And I'm definitely, they really worked hard on me, and I'm very appreciative, because when people look at me, they say, you don't look like you've had a stroke. I said, no, I've had two strokes. And I said, it's hard work, because both strokes, I went back to the same hospital. Mm. And these people work so hard, you know. So yeah. I thank you for that. I thank you for that.
So, Beth, do you have any questions for us?
When did you start this? Because, you know, there's a guy on my job who I can visibly see. Mm-hmm. has a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to tell him, when you told me about the green, I don't know how to do podcasts, so I don't know how you go out to get on a podcast or listen to a podcast, because I wanted to tell him mm-hmm. to tune into your show, you mm-hmm. know, because he and I talk a lot about strokes on the job, you know, and I feel so bad for him, because his whole left side is shot down. And, you know, I see him working, and, you know, I can see how his arm, his dead arm, Billy is
I got a question for you.
To him.
Have you introduced him to your practice?
I didn't introduce him to my practice, but I did tell him about scrambled eggs and ham. So okay. I told him, I got to figure out how to tell you how to listen to this.
Oh, it's very easy. After the podcast, I'll go, if you want to talk about that, it's very easy. I'm going to send you a link so you can share it with all your friends if you want. And you can listen to yourself, you know, on the podcast.
Cool.
Also, I can post it on Facebook and LinkedIn, on any social media you want me to post it on with your approval.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, no, because a lot of people know I went through a stroke, and to hear that there's a podcast for it, that's just so good, because I don't think stroke victims get the attention that they really need in society. And this is a good platform for others whose stories might encourage other people, because there's a lot of stroke victims out there. Yeah.
I think it's every 60 seconds someone's having a stroke. I think it's every 60 seconds, or it's 1 minute and 60. I'm not sure. I have the statistics of what happens to, you know, in America. You know, someone's having a stroke as we speak.
Yes, I've seen people with half of their heads caved in because they had to remove that part of their brain so that they can function, and they're struggling trying to learn how to walk and carry things. And, you know, it really humbled me, because I'm like, you can't be complaining about having to do this. I said, look at what that person has to struggle through, and then I would just chant for the person, because now I feel so bad because my negativity that I'm really chanting, that I really hope that they get through all their therapy, because it's not easy looking at other people who's gone through the same thing, and they've have it a little worse than what you are. All I could do is pray for them, because I know the challenge, and they have a big challenge before them. But I didn't know you was doing this, so I'm glad to know that you have this this podcast going on, so that I can refer people that I know to listen to it, because they might be encouraged by it.
Well, Beth, I'll tell you something. I'll share something with you. I am so encouraged by your story. You know, that's very encouraging. You know, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I think Don has another question.
You know, an illness or something like a stroke falls within the invisible illness category, and people don't necessarily, because it's not something they see externally, people don't even focus on it as much. But so I think that it's great that we are talking about these things, because
fantastic, because you are right. So many people are oblivious to this until it happens to them.
Right.
And then they're like, because I was one of them. I never really thought. I knew what stroke meant, but in my wildest dreams, I would have never thought I would have a stroke, let alone two of them. But I've definitely been blessed by this practice, because I don't look. I just feel like I've had a stroke. I don't look it. So, you know, definitely this is such a great thing that you guys are doing. And I would like to spread the word around as much as possible about scrambled eggs and ham.
Okay, thank you so much, Beth. Thank you. So,
you're welcome.
So this morning, me and Don were the scrambled eggs and you were the ham. So thank you so thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Beth. And we are out of time. And I just want to say, you know, thank you. I just want to thank everybody for joining us. Don Wade, myself, the host, Bill Clark, Don Wade, the co-host, and Beth. Beth, thank you so much for your story. You know, it's been so inspirational. And I know that you're going to touch people's hearts. You know, thank you for joining us today. My sincere prayers are for your health and your happiness and that you live out your lives to the fullest. So thank you so much for listening. Beth, thank you again. We'll talk again after the podcast. Have a great, successful, and a victorious. And this is Yasko Coco, who had a stroke also. She's singing in the background. This is after her stroke. Yasko. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Beth.
Bye.